Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Episode 234 for the love of the game on the Bleed Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online. The holiday season is rolling. NFL is in full stride. Playoffs are right around the corner. NBA is in full stride. We have in-season tournament. NHL is hitting mid-season form. And you can find everything you need to wager on your favorite sports, not just those, but also college football playoff, MMA, you name it, BetOnline has all your info that you need. So head to the website today and remember to use promo code BLEAV for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, promo code BLEAV to get 50% on your first money deposited. BetOnline, where the game starts. With that said, episode 234 for the love of the game. Let's get this work.
Let me just make this statement loud and clear. Jersey's here. Some dudes got problems with me over there.
Some
people see me tripping back on tight. That's
we don't do it like
you know my stuff like Drake.
Yes, y'all, it's the one and only.
What else?
And I came to have fun, hit homie.
What else?
And I came with a ton of money.
But
don't get it twisted, the gun is on me
now.
This chick's with a man frontin' on me. I'll holla at her when she done with homie. Good, jump off, I got a ton of grown freaks. One named Tasha, one named Monique. One's deep it out, keep her makeup tight. She got a good heel going with a Jacob Ice. In my little club, she stay up night. And she give me...
All right, we're back. Quick turnaround, episode 234 for the love of the game on the Bleed Podcast Network with yours truly. It is ATH. We're back in the cut. And I know I mentioned at the end of 233 that it was supposed to be a combo episode. We had Jordan Marks talking about college football and the committee and the selections that they made, college football playoff. And we're supposed to have Johnny Lazarus to come on Bleed Podcast's own Johnny Lazarus, superstar in his own right, to talk about the New York Rangers and how they are awesome. But because of scheduling, I ended up splitting them up. So here's a little bit of a bonus episode. And it actually worked out great because I did want to react to the Knicks game last night because we were recording on a Tuesday afternoon. The Knicks lost in the in-season tournament to the Milwaukee Bucks, 146 to 122. This game was close in the first half, but ultimately the Knicks got the doors blown off. And to be totally honest, and I speak for New York fans everywhere, I don't care that it was the in-season tournament. I don't care about the results of the in-season tournament. If the Knicks had won the in-season tournament and put up a banner, I would have puked a little bit. Yeah, when they play basketball games against good teams, I'd like them to win as a measuring stick. But the in-season tournament and the results weren't doing it for me. But the Knicks so far this season have beaten the teams they're supposed to beat, and they have lost to the teams that they aren't as good as, that they're clearly a step behind it. And Milwaukee is one of those teams in the East that are clearly better than the New York Knicks. And there are a couple of reasons for that. I mean, Kenny Smith said it best on TNT last night, that when the Knicks go into these games, they never, ever have the best player on the floor. I mean, last night, no question, they didn't even have the best two players on the floor with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard. As good as Jalen Brunson is, he's not those guys. So, as Charles Barkley added in, the Knicks have no margin for error. And you saw that in the first half last night. The Knicks were surviving because Julius Randle had an out-of-body experience. He was perfect from the field and perfect from the line. And you all know that that's not sustainable. That offense is not sustainable. While you looked at the shots that Milwaukee was getting and they scored like crazy, their shots looked like they were sustainable. Giannis was scoring in the paint. They were leaving the shooters open and they were making open three-point shots. Now, again, you don't expect Milwaukee shooters to shoot as well as they did from three last night. I mean, last night was absurd. Last night from three, they were 23 of 38. The Knicks were 7 of 23. I mean, 16 more threes and Giannis scoring 35 points, you're never going to win that game. But that's not even the point. The point was the quality of shots that Milwaukee was getting. That seemed sustainable from the first half to the second half. The Knicks shots and their points coming off of those shots that they were making did not seem sustainable. And what ended up happening is Randle went from going 10 for 10 in the first half to going 4 for 9 in the second half and not really being much of a factor. And Jalen Brunson played a really disgusting game for him. And I thought he was incredibly ball hoggy last night. He did not move the ball at all. And the Knicks got beat up. And yeah, their defense sometimes, if another team makes 23 threes, there's not a whole heck of a lot you're going to do. I know the Knicks gave up the most points they've ever given up in their history since 1962, since Wilt Chamberlain had his 100-point game against them. But that's not really the point. The point is about why this team is in a stalemate. And it's because of their personnel and the way they play. Let's start with the personnel. I touched on it a little bit before that when they go into these games against good teams, they never have the best player on the floor. Jalen Brunson, as great as he's been, is ideally suited to be the second best player on a really, really good team. As good as he is the second best player ideally on a really good team. Julius Randle is ideally the third best player on a really good team. But that's never going to happen with the Knicks. Because Randle had his out-of-body experience in 2021, which led them to the playoffs. It's the first time in 10 years, Tom Thibodeau is ultra indebted to him and will treat him like a top 10 player in the league, even though he's nowhere close. You saw it in the style of play, and he was making shots in the first half, but it's not conducive to winning basketball games against really good teams. The way he played last night, which is the way he likes to play, which is the way he's empowered to play, is not conducive to winning basketball against good teams. I mean, he was pretty much a black hole last night. And the only reason he only took 19 shots is because the game got out of hand and he didn't have the opportunity to take more shots. And the fact that Jalen Brunson, the point guard, was very trigger happy last night. It's a team that is filled with fourth or fifth starters and guys who, you know, are just not that level of player that's going to get you over the top. So they're going to be mired in mediocrity because of, I shouldn't say mediocrity, because that's harsh. Because it's not mediocre. It's good. But they're never going to take the next step with Julius Randle on the roster and Tom Thibodeau coaching the team. So that's a good transition to how they play. And one of the big gripes I've had with this team and Quentin Grimes and his struggles lately, and he's not blameless, and I'll get to him not being blameless in a second, but is a microcosm of something I've said for a while, and Grimes is just the prime example of it and how the Knicks play affecting their players in terms of their production, okay? They don't move the ball. The Knicks do not pass the ball. You can look, especially the starters, when Brunson, Randall, Barrett are on the court together, the ball movement is atrocious. Now, those guys all have their merits, okay? Jalen Brunson is a really good offensive basketball player. Really good. But sometimes, and last night was a major example of that, he gets trigger happy and gets tunnel vision and looks for his own. And he doesn't necessarily, or I should say not necessarily, but last night he did not have the feel of what the game called for. A prime example, this is in the third quarter when a close game, a three-point game at the half was starting to get away from the Knicks. Malik Beasley missed the three, one of the few threes he missed. Brook Lopez got an offensive rebound. What's the best time to shoot a three? Right after an offensive rebound. Kicks it back out to Malik Beasley. Buries the three. I think the Knicks went down seven at that point. A momentum-shifting shot. If you saw the way the game was being played, a momentum-shifting shot. Brunson then comes down, calls for a screen, all right, because the Knicks basically do the same set. Brunson's going to call for a screen. Grimes is going to run to a corner. RJ Barrett's going to run to a corner. Mitchell Robinson's going to be in a dunker spot. No one's going to move ever. Brunson goes quick within 6 or 7 seconds of the shot clock, goes quick, pull-up jump shot in the mid-range, moderately contested, back of the rim, transition the other way. I believe Giannis got a layup. Now it's a 9-point game. If you're the point guard, and again, I say this knowing that Brunson has a great one-on-one offensive skill set, but if you're the point guard, you sometimes need to know when to slow it down a little bit and pass the ball around just to kill the momentum a little bit. And Brunson did not have that last night. I thought he played a terrible game last night. I know what the numbers are going to say. He shot 10 of 22. It's not terrible. 24 points, 6 assists. But I thought he played a very hoggy game last night. And I know the whipping boy for the Knicks so far this year has been Quentin Grimes. I mean, if you look at his numbers from this year to last year, last year averaged 11.3 points a game. This year, 5.8. Last year, he shot 46, almost 47% from the field. Excuse me. This year, he's shooting 36% from the field, 35% from three, which isn't bad, but down from 38.5 last year. And Knick fans are up in arms with Quentin Grimes. And again, he's not blameless, and I'll get to him in a second of him not being blameless, but Knicks fans are up in arms, and they're wondering why he still starts. And, you know, it's hard to defend because at a certain point, Grimes has to shake out of it and be more aggressive. Even when he gets the ball, be more aggressive. But go back at last night's game. How many passes did he receive? Maybe five. Maybe five passes. So in the box score last night, 18 minutes, 0 for 1 from the field, 1 three-pointer, 1 rebound, 1 steal, no assists, 4 personal fouls. So the guy is tasked with guarding the team's best perimeter player, whether it's a guy like Damian Lillard or a guy like Jason Tatum, okay, because it ranges, okay? So you're asking him to do that. You then go to the corner, and he doesn't move from that corner either. Like, there's never a cut. There's never a back pick. There's never a back screen. They don't have any motion to their offense. So he's basically standing there cold and never receives the ball. And he's expected to make corner threes when he maybe gets 4 or 5 passes a game. So as he said, as a quote, because he's clearly frustrated that every shot feels like 100 pounds if I don't make it, because if I don't make it, and again, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, I'm going to come out of the game. I know that sometimes he needs to take matters into his own hands and be more aggressive. But it's on the coaching staff to get him the ball. Use him like J.J. Redick, okay? Use him in a dribble handoff with Julius Randle. set a back screen for him. Somebody cut, somebody move, somebody do something. It's just horrible. It's horrible to watch. And Grimes is understandably frustrated. I mean, anybody who's played basketball at any level and hasn't been the focal point of a team knows that even if you just touch the ball a couple of times, you get in the rhythm. If somebody sets you a screen, make a cut, do something, you feel like you're in the flow of the game. Grimes never feels like he's in the flow of the game this year. And all my Knicks fan friends who are absolute simpletons, all right, just to name a few, my buddy Eric, my buddy Max, Justin Diller, shout out to him, friend of the program, who show me the box score of Quentin Grimes' box score. And again, it's grisly. It's really ugly. But they don't talk about the fact that, and I know Justin used to be a really good ball player, really good ball player. So he can appreciate the fact that if no one's ever giving you the ball and you're never moving and no one's ever setting you a screen, that you're just ice cold and you're not going to make catch and shoot shots. But they'll show me these numbers and act like because they play fantasy basketball that they know what's going on over here, when clearly the struggles are extremely explainable. And this goes back to the coaching staff and Tom Thibodeau. I give Tom Thibodeau a lot of credit. His teams always play hard. But he's incredibly simple-minded when it comes to offensive basketball. Incredibly, incredibly simple-minded. It's hurt RJ Barrett, and I've been critical of RJ Barrett, but it's hurt him in terms of the lack of motion. And it's just he trusts Randall because he's indebted to Randall for that 1 year. He trusts Brunson because the Knicks brought him in as a big free agent, and he trusts Barrett because he was the number three pick overall. And there's a clear hierarchy based on what you were paid, what you did for me 3 years ago in a weird COVID year, and where you were drafted in the draft. And nothing else seems to matter. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, again, this formula can win you regular season games against mediocre to below average teams. That can get you to 46 wins. That may, in the right situation, get you to the second round. But you're never going more than that. You're never elevating ahead of that. I mean, you saw this with the Bulls. And those teams went a little bit further. But because the league was way less talented than it is now, Tom Thibodeau is treating Julius Randle like he treated Derrick Rose in the Bulls years. And again, prime Julius Randle wasn't as good as prime Derrick Rose. And when Derrick Rose, after his injuries, wasn't the same, it didn't matter because Tibbs trusted him the same way, which alienated Jimmy Butler and got Jimmy Butler out of there. Jimmy Butler turned out to be pretty, pretty good. So Tibbs gives this team a ceiling. But some of it is also on Leon Rose. Because at a certain point, Leon Rose has instilled a culture, and he's done a lot of good things. Don't get me wrong, he's done a lot of good things. But Leon Rose has instilled this culture of La Familia. So if you were ever with CAA, if you went to Villanova, you're his guy. And I think that trickles down to the coaching staff and to the players, and the players get that vibe. Like, for example, Emmanuel Quickley not getting the La Familia vibe like Julius Randle, Jalen Brunson, RJ Barrett, Dante DiVincenzo, Josh Hart. They're a good team. And Knicks fans have suffered for a long, long time. So having a good team, a competent team, is a breath of fresh air. But don't ever get it twisted. This team is going nowhere fast. It has a ceiling of a 46-47 win team that can maybe win a round depending on the playoff matchup. And at a certain point, that's going to get tiresome. So I don't want to hear about the RJ Barrett being hot shooting starting the year because he's gotten cold. I don't want to hear about it when Randall has a big game. I don't want to hear about all of Jalen Brunson's exploits. And again, I think he's a fantastic player. He's a bargain. He's way better than I thought he ever was going to be. But he's not the Lord and Savior of the New York Knicks. When you're going into a playoff series with him as your best player, it's like going into a gunfight with a knife. They play really hard. The effort's always there. But it's a simplistic way of playing, and it ultimately has a ceiling. And last night's game, and again, I want to reiterate, the fact that they didn't win a midseason tournament game, no one cares. No one in New York cares. No Knicks fans care. We want a title that's won in June. We don't give a shit about the midseason tournament. But it was a microcosm about all the issues that I've been pointing out with this Knicks team for a while now and have gotten glossed over because they've beaten up on some bad teams. Anyway, had to get that off my chest. We are going to switch gears. We are going to talk to Johnny Lazarus about the New York Rangers, who are by far the best team in New York and by far the best chance that New York sports fans have at a title this year. But one last thing before we get to him. NFL picks against the spread. We are up to week 14. Last week, I did the impossible. I went 5-0. So now we are back way over 500, 33-29-3 on the year. So without further ado, this week's picks against the spread. Pick number one, I've got the Denver Broncos on the road against the LA Chargers. Broncos plus +3. The Chargers are horrific, are absolutely horrific. I don't know why you would ever trust the Chargers. The Broncos have played pretty well, and I think they're the better team at this point. So I'm going to take the Broncos plus +3. Pick number two. We are going with the Eagles on the road, plus +3.5 at Dallas. I know what the stats say regarding Dallas and their offense and Dak Prescott. I don't care. I don't trust them in a big spot. I never will. Mike McCarthy is still the coach. Dak Prescott's still the quarterback. This is a measuring stick game. I don't think they measure up. Eagles plus +3.5. At pick number three, I've got the Houston Texans on the road against the Jets. The Jets are an absolute dumpster fire. An absolute dumpster fire. I don't care who's playing quarterback for them. It can be Zach Wilson. It can be Brett Rippin. It doesn't matter. I am fading the Jets. So I've got the Texans minus -4.5. At four, I've got the 49ers minus -10.5 at home against Seattle. I talked about in episode 233. I think the Niners are the best team in the league. They're healthy right now. I think they are gunning for the number one seed, and I ultimately think they're going to get it. So I'm going to roll with the Niners laying the wood 10.5. And pick number five, another team laying the wood, the Dolphins at home minus -13 against the Titans. The Titans are terrible. The Titans are absolutely terrible. I'm going to roll with the Dolphins here minus -13. So again, Broncos plus +3, Eagles plus +3.5, Texans minus -4.5, 49ers minus -10.5, Dolphins minus -13. Those are your week 14 picks against the spread. Let's keep the good vibes of last week rolling. And with that said, we're going to get to Johnny Lazarus to talk some Rangers in just a matter of moments. So I finally got him on. I know I've been teasing this for a while. The man's one of the busiest men in hockey media. Unbelievable guy. It's none other than Johnny Lazarus, Blue Crew Pod, Blue Podcast Network. Johnny, what's good, man? Thanks for slumming it today. I know you're a busy man.
Nah, Aaron, I appreciate you and thank you for the flexibility. Yeah, these last couple weeks have been busy. I've probably slept like a total of 12 hours in the last week, but appreciate you having me and Yeah, I think this is what, third, fourth time we're doing this. So
third, fourth time, yeah. You're jet setting around the country, covering hockey. It's like you were made to do this, and you're awesome at it. So there's no one else I like talking Rangers of other than you, except for my uncle Mark, because my uncle. But you know, you're one of the best in the business. So I'm honored and privileged.
Thank you. No, thank you. I really appreciate that.
So we started DMing about this particular Rangers season. It was after they had won that second leg of the back-to-back against Boston. I think, what was it, the score, like 5-2 or something? Or was it 7-5? It was a high-scoring game.
7-4, yeah.
Right? 7-4. And at that point, you know, given the way last year ended, which was in bitter disappointment against the Devils after, you know, getting Tarasenko, they got Kane. Rangers fans had a lot of high hopes. Losing 7 against the Devils, going into this season, like, we thought they'd be good, but we didn't think they'd be this good. When was it this year that you kind of knew that this team was going to be ultra, ultra special? Because for me, it was when they beat that Boston on the second leg of the back-to-back, considering Boston, no matter how many guys they lose to retirement, still seem to be at the top of the East along with the Rangers right now. So what was it for you where you were like, this team really has a chance to do something special?
Well, I still think it's early to say, like, you know, I'm not saying it's too early to say they can do something special, but, you know, I still think there's a lot of kinks that need to be worked out. You know, it's funny because I just wrote about it, but, like, you know, the Rangers have won a lot of close games, and the games they've lost, you know, things have gotten bad really quickly. And I think, you know, in order to tighten that up, like, you know, they're winning games, which is most, I'm going to lose myself right now in my train of thought. But the most important thing is that the Rangers have won hockey games. But I think the fact that they've won those games has somewhat overshadowed a little bit of the mistakes that they've made in winning those games, if that makes sense. So I still think there's a lot to clean up. And, you know, that's why we're, what, 24 games in. And, you know, I don't think we should be talking about a Stanley Cup right now, because there's still a lot of hockey to be played. And we've seen a lot of adversity already. And injury battles and whatnot. Philip Hedl, it's unclear when he's going to come back. Igor had some day-to-day stuff. Foxy got hurt. Like, there's been a lot to overcome. And I think that's where I look at the team and said, wow, they're special because they're doing this without all those guys and the adversity that they've faced. So I think the overall buy-in from everybody, no matter who's in the lineup, whether it's Johnny Brodzinski on the first line or Kaapo Kakko on the first line, they're finding ways to win hockey games. And I think when you do that, that takes a very special group. But, you know, in March, if they're winning games 7-4 or 6-5, there's still going to be a lot of room for concern, you know? So I think once the Rangers find ways to win consistently 4-2, 3-1, you know, 1-0, 2-0, that's when I'll look at this team and be like, okay, they're legit. But until that happens, I think right now it's still, you know, up in the air of how special they truly are.
I want to save the goaltending issue for a little bit, but you said clean up a bunch of things. And I agree with you. Like, they've won a lot of games this year where they haven't necessarily played their best and they've actually been outplayed. But, you know, finding a way to win, as you said, in any sport, but, you know, hockey especially, considering there are weird bounces and just there's a lot of variation. It's a really special trait to be able to find ways to win. So you said clean things up. What's the main thing that you want them to clean up? Obviously, injuries, you know, you have no control over that. Yeah. But in terms of the play on the ice, what's like the biggest thing for you in terms of that you'd love to see them sharpen up a little bit?
Well, it cost them against Ottawa, and it was a stat that came out this past week that the Rangers were 27th in odd man rushes against. So, you know, they're taking a lot of chances offensively, which is good. You want your team to, you know, think offense, right, and be creative and whatnot. But if it's going to cost you defensively, then you got to clean it up a little bit. And, you know, I think there were moments where, you know, I just think about, and I'm not calling anyone out, but like a guy like Keandre likes to step in and join the play. Yeah. You know, I think at times maybe it's cost him getting back. Like, you look at those Ottawa goals in the second period that they scored, you know, Tarasenko, odd man rush, comes in short side shelf. I think Drake Batherson comes in, cleans up a rebound on a 2-on-3 rush that Vinny Trocheck, you know, dives on his stomach on a back check. You know, I think just little things like that go a long way. And if the Rangers aren't giving up those odd man rushes, they're probably not going to let up more than one or two goals a night. So, you know, even in the games they've won, like San Jose, like they scored two late goals in the third period, both, I believe, on odd man rushes, if I'm not mistaken. You know, a backdoor tap in. I'm forgetting what the other one was, but you know, just little things like that. There's been so many cases where, you know, they kind of just lose focus for like a 2-3-4 minute span and it cost them a little bit. So that's the one thing I'd say for sure that needs to be cleaned up the most.
I hate using that term that they use in sports, like especially in basketball, huge basketball fan, called playing with their food. But do you think that like sometimes the Rangers know how talented they are, that they kind of, for lack of a better term, play with their food a little bit, sometimes take their, you know, foots off the gas? Like I was at the game, what was it, last week against Detroit, right? That Wednesday night, where first period was fine, second period was a disaster, and then all of a sudden in the third period they turn up and they win the game 3-2. Are you seeing that with that team? Like, is there a little bit of overconfidence in a sense?
Well, I think that game was odd, right? The first half of that game, there was just like no jam, like from both teams. It was just a weird
Besides
energy.
Besides Panarin, there was nobody on the Rangers who looked engaged. And I mean, Mika ended up, you know, really getting involved late second period, early third period, making things happen. But yeah, there wasn't a lot of juice.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it's funny because I asked Laviolette about like that two goal lead question, right? Yeah, everyone talks about it in hockey. Two goal lead's the most dangerous lead. And, you know, even he said, and even myself, you know, knowing my, like, you know, obviously not NHL level, but like, you know, any athlete, sometimes when you feel comfortable, it's just human nature to, you know, let your mind drift a little bit, right? Like if you're in a hockey game or a basketball game and you're, let's say basketball, you're up by 20 points, like you're probably gonna, you know, your mind's gonna wander a little bit more than if you were, you know, in a 2-3 point game, right? So, you know, I think it is human nature again. You know, it's early in the year. And, you know, it's a weird thing to say because, like, you know, I feel like any average Joe would be like, how are you not locked in when you're playing in the NHL or playing a professional sport? But again, like, you know, this is just one of 82, right? There's so many games and so many nights and so many hours. And it's just human nature to let your mind drift at some points. You just hope that it doesn't come back to bite you in the ass. But, you know, I think, you know, as we progress and move on, when you have to buy in a little bit more, they will be a little bit more focused, hopefully. So, again, just like human nature stuff, but these are, you know, again, these are fixable problems, right? So that's why it's more positive than negative.
In the NBA, we see that the regular season, the style of play is so different from, you know, the playoffs. Like there's a clear delineation between regular season basketball and postseason basketball where it almost doesn't look like the same sport. And you mentioned something that, you know, when guys like Keandre Miller, who's constantly joining the rush early and is offensive minded, but is that something that he would necessarily pull back in the playoffs? Would you want the aggressive nature in the playoffs as well? Because, you know, one goal can make or break the difference, you know, so.
Yeah, no, I think there's a time and a place for it. I mean, Keandre is someone I've been talking to actually a lot, like post game, you know, after practice, I've had a chance to ask him these questions because it's been so noticeable that he's, you know, reading plays offensively way better than I think he has, you know, in years past. And I think he already has, you know, what, 6 goals already this year or something like that. I'm pretty sure he has 4 in his last 6 games. So, you know, I think for him, like you want guys to feel confident enough to like take those risks, right? But you don't want them, you know, you don't want it to have a puck go in the back of your net if that's what it's going to do, or, you know,
right.
So, I think, you know, as long as they're reading and reacting at the right time, like, you know, you can take more chances when you're up by 2 or 3 goals, but when you're down by a goal or two, you know, that's when you should be taking more risks when you need to score goals. But, again, like you don't want to turn a 1-goal deficit into a 2-goal deficit and dig yourself in a deeper hole. So I think there's always a time and a place. And I think that's what Laviolette has done a really good job of, you know, doing that 1-3-1 and, you know, making reads and whatnot and setting players out at certain times. You know, he's double shifted Panarin. He's really mixed and matched some things. I think he had Zibanejad, Kreider, and Panarin out together a little bit in the Ottawa game. Didn't really work, but it's worked, you know, previously in the Nashville game when they found themselves in a 2-goal hole. So, you know, it's all time and place. And, you know, luckily the Rangers have given themselves enough room right now, you know, 18-5-1 to take a little bit more risks or, you know, chances to see what they can do, you know, for later down the road when things get a little bit tighter, things get a little bit quicker and harder to play in, and you can see what works then.
Perfect it now so that when it really, really matters, it's a lot sharper. So obviously you mentioned Peter Laviolette. They brought him in the offseason for more of the casuals, right? What is his coaching influence done to this team in terms of just like real substantive changes? How has he just mixed up the vibe in whatever way, whether it's strategic, whether it's personality, to get this team firing on like the cylinders that they're firing right now?
Well, it's funny because
they have more pep in their step.
Yeah, I mean, Jacob Trouba actually just said it on, sorry, I just got a funny Twitter notification. Jacob Trouba just said it like in the media. I just saw the Rangers videos post a clip of, you know, him saying that Laviolette knows like how to balance that like buddy-buddy versus coach relationship. And I think, you know, the last couple of years, the narrative around Gerard Gallant was he was too buddy-buddy, hands-off, let the players kind of do their own thing. Where sometimes a lot of players, you know, no matter if you're 19 years old or 35 years old, you need that extra kick in the ass, right? Mm-hmm. I think even, you know, the star players especially, right? Like Panarin, you know, I think the last couple of years got away with doing some, as he said, stupid shit at the blue line and whatnot. And, you know, wouldn't face any consequences if he, you know, caused a turnover and whatnot. Not that he's done that this year because he's been phenomenal all year long. But, you know, Laviolette will be the first one to probably give him a boot in the butt, you know, if he's
right,
you know, slacking off and whatnot. So the overall buy-in has been great. I think a huge thing as well is the personal relationships. You know, I mentioned it before a little bit last week that when the Rangers had 5 or 6 days in between games, when they played in New Jersey, Laviolette had the family come out to practice, and, you know, just that little message goes such a long way when you invite players' families out. It shows that you care about them. And I think, you know, as a former player, you want to play for a coach that, you know, cares about you as a human being. So that goes such a long way too. Not that Gallant didn't, but right. You know, I think that extra effort that Laviolette has made to build these relationships and you know, try to get to know the guys. And something I've noticed actually at the morning skates is he pulls guys aside one-on-one and he, you know, has clear motivation for conversations on the day of a game, whether it's, you know, a good one, a bad one, or just, you know, catching up with the guy, seeing how they're doing. And that's something that I've never actually experienced as a player or seen as a media member, is a coach do that so frequently. And I think those go a long way too. And, you know, when you ask players about those conversations, they won't tell you what was said and whatnot, but you could see that they appreciate it. So I think that's right. Been huge as well.
Scoring even strength. Rangers power play has been really good. Their penalty kill has been fantastic, but scoring even strength seems to be a little bit of an issue. What are you seeing in terms of things that they can do a little bit differently, right? Where they can kind of juice the offense when it's even strength, because they've been opportunistic, but I feel like even strength has just been a little bit of an issue. And if they don't get a little bit of help from the whistles, that they kind of have trouble scoring.
Yeah, I think it's been, you know, I wouldn't say it's totally lacked like it has in years past. You know, I think, 2 years ago, even that 2022 run, they relied a little bit too much on their power play. And even last year, I think that was the case too. Like, you know, the Rangers in the playoffs, like the games they lost against the Devils, the common thing in all four of those games was the fact that they did not score a power play goal. Like they kind of, you know, I made the example a lot that they were like the Knicks who live and die by the three pointer, right? Like that's something that NBA teams say all the time that, you know, somewhat related to the Rangers, but they're still generating chances at 5-on-5. Sometimes pucks aren't going in, but I think, you know, their ability to create off the rush and obviously they've had to mix and match lines a little bit with, you know, Johnny Rodzinski stepping in, Filip Hedl being out, Kaapo Kakko being out. There's been a lot of, you know, filling roles to see who fits where and what works and what doesn't. Like, you know, Blake Wheeler had some time in the first line. He's dropped down and whatnot. So I think it's just a little bit of getting familiar with one another, plus, you know, learning this system under Laviolette. Like, we're only 24 games in and, you know, they have done a good job. So I don't think it's been as bad as, like I said, years past, but there's always room for improvement, I think, in that regard. And remember, like, Mika Zibanejad, like, wasn't really producing. Chris Kreider wasn't really producing at 5-on-5 early in the year. You know, they were relying a lot on that Lafreniere, Trocheck, Panarin, Hedl when he was in line to score a lot. But then, you know, lately, Jimmy Vesey stepped up and scored some goals. You know, he's probably the most consistent one on the bottom six. But, yeah, I think, you know, just continuing to build and not to be cliche, but, like, trust the process and whatever and just get comfortable with one another, knowing the lines and the matches and whatnot, it will help.
And we're probably not being super fair because they've gotten out to such a hot start that it's almost just like we're judging them on a curve that, you know, it's just different. Like, we expect more from them considering that they have 37 points and they're, you know, top of the East. We talked about Alexis Lafreniere. This is something that you've been on for a while, right? This is your guy. A lot of Rangers fans in the past have been exceedingly disappointed. You've defended him. You've planted your flag on Lafreniere Island, and he's been excellent this year. His best year to date, you know, obviously looking like he's going to fulfill that billing of like the number one pick. What has that meant to you just personally, right? Where you finally see your guy, you have like your Twitter takes, you have your opinions, and you're just like, I'm steadfast on this. Cause I have him too.
Yeah.
I'm steadfast on this. I believe in this guy. And now it's coming to fruition. Take your victory lap.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been like a ride or die with my guys, right? Like, I think that's how most sports fans used to be, but now for whatever reason, sport fandom has changed, right? Where like fans, like, I don't want to say they have like a say in decisions, but like, if fans are on top of a guy, it like gets to management, you know. I think like with Twitter and whatnot, like, you know, people see that stuff. Like even, you know, and I'm trying to think of like an example where, you know, New York has like kind of gotten a guy out of the city or whatever, but you know, it's a shame that
there's plenty of them across sports. I mean, I can't think of one specifically for the Rangers, but like Sonny Gray for the Yankees, mm-hmm. Joey Votto for even the
Votto, right?
Yeah.
Votto? Yeah, like,
yeah, he was like booed out of Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, it's crazy. And listen, Alexi Lafreniere is a 22-year-old kid. Like, right. You know, I think there's everyone's different in the way they grow and develop, especially in hockey, right? Because, you know, hockey is one of those sports where, you know, typically an NHL draft pick, if you're not between 1 and 5, you're probably not coming into the league right away and making a huge difference. And not many do come in and make a huge difference right away. Like, not everyone's a Connor Bedard or Connor McDavid. Like, there's so many number one picks that, you know, take a little bit while to get going. And I think that's so important too. And it also, you know, again, these aren't excuses. It's just facts. Like, he had a lot of talented players playing in front of him that he probably wasn't going to beat out. And, you know, we talked about human nature before. When you know your role on a team and you know how a coach sees you, it's hard to really step above and beyond and you know, exceed what's expected of you in that role that you're given. So no matter how well he played, like, he was, you know, I think like third or fourth most even strength goals like the last couple of years. Like, it's not, he wasn't performing in the role he was given. He just wasn't given a chance to go above and beyond. And I think Laviolette has come in and given that opportunity to him. And obviously he's thrived under it. And, you know, I think he's got a ton of swagger, and we haven't seen him find that swagger till now. And it's paying off for the team. It's paying off for him. And his confidence just continues to grow. But again, you know, still always room for improvement. I'd like to see him shoot a little bit more, or think shoot first a little bit more. I think sometimes he's guilty of deferring to Panarin and looking for Panarin as opposed to taking that shot. But the two of them have clicked so well, and it's been so fun to watch. And yes, for me personally, I'm just happy that, you know, I try to be a loyal guy, right? And I think, you know, these are still like somewhat kids, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, your thing with Lafreniere is the thing that I have with the Knicks with Quentin Grimes, that it drives me crazy that he's basically been pigeonholed into this role of him not doing anything, especially on offense, expected to guard the best perimeter player on defense. And then they wonder why he can't make threes at a certain point. So, well, because no one passes him the ball, and he's expected to guard like Damian Lillard every single time. Right? Yeah. And it's just like, it's so thankless. It drives me crazy. So I commiserate with you in terms of, you know, the Lafreniere stake. And, you know, defending your guy against all the haters. You mentioned Panarin that he's playing with. I mean, more of a seasoned dude who's been around the block a little bit. But, like, you know, this guy's in the MVP conversation at this point, no? Like, he has to be.
Has to be. And he is such a joy to be around. Like, that guy is so funny. And you can just tell he's so happy right now, like, with the success and whatnot after – you know, I think a lot of people were hard on him. People were trying to ride him out of town after last year's playoffs, right? Like, everyone was kind of treating Panarin like he's done, whatever, you know, like he can't do anything in the playoffs and whatnot. And listen, he still has to prove that this year, which they will make the playoffs, but you know what I mean? But again, like, Panarin is such a likable athlete. And, you know, it's a shame that not everyone gets to see that. You know, and this is something that just,
well, that's why we have to tune into you, because you have the inside scoop.
Well, he doesn't do interviews on camera, so it's hard to get a feel for how he really does treat the media, but he is like the nicest athlete I've ever met in my life. Like, he's always, and I love the guys that understand I'm kind of searching for the fun stuff when I ask questions, and he right. knows that. You know, I think we now have somewhat of a relationship. When I walk up to him, he kind of knows something fun and light is coming. You know, like, I asked him if we'll see him score more rebound greasy goals like he did last game against San Jose, and he was like, yeah, I'm gonna be net front on the PP now, like Kreides doesn't have to worry about it anymore, you know, like fun stuff like that. And I don't even remember what the original question was. I just love Panarin so much. He's the nicest guy ever.
Well, your vibe, to your credit, is a little bit different than Larry Brooks. Is it Larry Brooks from the New York Post?
Who's yeah, Larry's good. He gets a tough rap, but he's a nice guy. He's
no,
nice.
I'm sure he is, but he's more like, you know, businesslike. You obviously play college hockey, and you've been in a locker room, and you understand what that's like. So
I'm not as critical. It's just I'm not a little as critical. Different. Yeah,
it's just a little different vibe. Like, you're asking different questions, but yeah, it's, you know, Panarin, for a guy who, you know, the Ranger fans have had an up and down relationship with, it's really nice to see him put together such an awesome campaign in terms of him being in the MVP race. And hopefully, you know, he continues to just be aggressive and not overly pass. And you know, he's scoring goals at an unbelievable clip this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's shooting the puck. That's the biggest thing. I think, you know, I haven't checked the stats as of late, but I'm pretty sure he has like 20 more shots than anyone else in the team. I'll actually look right now because I'm kind of curious.
While you're looking at that, because I know you can multitask. Mm-hmm. We mentioned the goaltending a little bit earlier in the segment. And again, this is coming off like a weird, you know, bad loss. 6-2 to Ottawa is not very good. Shesterkin, is there cause for concern?
I don't think so. Sorry, I'm just pulling this up right now. You know, listen, I think things haven't really gone his way fully so far this year. But yeah, Panarin has 96 shots, and the next most is Mikko at 60. So that's a major, major difference. But as far as Shesterkin goes, like, this is a competitor, right? Like, he's not wanting to quit on himself, quit on the team in front of him. You know, again, I think maybe sometimes as hockey players, knowing that Igor is in net, you do get a little bit not lazier, but
lackadaisical.
Yeah. You know, like, all right, Igor will bail me out.
Security blanket for so long. Well, not exactly.
Exactly. Like, it's, you know, like, probably don't have to back check as hard knowing Igor's in net. You know, he'll make the save, right? But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's been a little ugly as of late. I don't know, you know, what it is per se. But there's also been, you know, I think of maybe two games. I'm pretty sure Igor started that Nashville game and the Buffalo game where the Rangers came out totally flat. And he kept them in the game for most of it. Like, the Buffalo game, I think, 2-0 going into the third. The Nashville game got broken open a little bit in the second. I think it was 4-0, you know, in the second at some point. But, you know, those are two games right there, 2 out of 6 losses that the Rangers just don't really show up. So
right.
I don't think he's fully to blame. Do I think the Ottawa game, he could have been a little bit better? Yeah, but, you know, again, long season. There's going to be nights where you're off. It's human.
You mentioned on your Instagram his body language. Is it going to become an issue if it persists this way? And again, because you mentioned, because it's not his fault in a sense where the Rangers come out flat and his performance kind of suffers. But, you know, if he's the best player on the team, which he has been in the past, like, he's got to be a little bit of an example, no?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think that happens so often. I can only think of like maybe 5 or 6 times in his career where he's shown frustration like that. And we're talking about 3-4 years. So it's not really that much, but you know, I always hated when a goalie flipped out over a play that was my fault and whatnot. Right. I don't think he's doing that at an individual. I think, you know, that's after a 5-1 loss and he's just pissed off in general. Again, I don't know if he's calling guys out in the room or not. I don't think guys are calling him out. I don't think it's that kind of culture. But yeah, I don't see this body language, so to speak, to be a consistent problem. Would I be shocked if it happens again? No, but I don't think it's like a lingering thing.
And again, we're judging him on a different curve because he's been so excellent, right? So your expectations are higher. But, you know, the beauty for the Rangers is they brought in Jonathan Quick. Obviously, older dude's been around the block, has been great, probably going to the Hall of Fame at some point. And he hasn't lost. Now, again, you know, he's gotten some help with the Rangers scoring a lot of goals for him. But it's a nice backup plan to have, even now at his old age.
I mean, considering that everyone was pissed when they originally first signed him, which I don't know why anyone would be. Everyone was acting like Halak was so much better. I think Halak was like 0-8-1 in his first 9 starts last year.
Yeah, why was that? I'm curious.
I think it's just typical Ranger fashion, right? Like going after a guy who's past his prime. And, you know, it's just what we do, I think. And they signed Wheeler also, like another 36-year-old player. It's just, you know, it's a team who... I think the frustrating part of it was because of the narrative after losing to a younger, faster Devils team and the Rangers just got older and slower, you know, was not a good position to be in. But, you know, the games aren't played on paper, right? So, you know, I understood why people might not be pleased. But again, it's a 3-time Stanley Cup champion, a Conn Smythe winner, one of the best American-born goalies ever coming to your team. Team he wants to be on, a team he grew up rooting for. You know, he's been around the block, like you said. He has a lot of, you know, knowledge and advice to give Igor, even though people were saying Igor's 27, he's won a Vezina, he doesn't need a mentor. He hasn't won a fucking cup, so yeah, he does.
I was going to say, hey, how many players on this Rangers roster have won titles? It's good to have dudes who won titles in your locker room for a team that's trying to break through.
Honestly, that's a good question. Off the top of my head,
it's probably just Quick and did Panarin win one with the Blackhawks? Or was
Panarin never won? It was never. Quick, but Quick, Bonino, Goodrow,
right? Nick Bonino is one.
That might be it. Just Quick, Bonino, and Goodrow. Unless I'm missing one, I feel like there might be an obvious one. No, not Lindgren, Fox, not Truba, Miller, not Schneider, Gustafson, Jones, Kreider's, Banja, no. Kako, obviously, no. Lafreniere, no. Trocheck, no. Fourth line. Pitlick, no. Yeah, I think that's just those three.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to have guys who know what it takes to win in your locker room for a team that hasn't won since 1994 is trying to get through that glass ceiling. So, obviously, right now, they've given themselves a cushion. But what's one thing you want to just like keep your eye on for the next couple of weeks? We're kind of in like, not sure if we're in the dog days of the season.
That's like February. Dog days is like post All-Star, like pre-deadline. It's just kind of like, let's get to the deadline and then we're going.
But I do think the newness of the season has kind of wore off in a sense where you could start making judgments in terms of what your team looks like and trying to maybe figure out if you do need to make a deal. So like at the trade deadline or figure things out with the roster. So what's one thing you want to pay attention to, or what's one trend you're curious to see if it continues? You know, just give me something.
Well, I think they need to find some sort of consistency. Like they had it in that 10 game stretch, you know, when they went on that road trip, but that magic has disappeared, I think, from those games. You know, those were all wins that were pretty low scoring. They looked very strong defensively, not many lapses. And for whatever reason, they've kind of gotten away from that. So if they can just find that consistency again and, you know, carry it for 10 to 20 games, that's something I'd be searching for. Cause right now they're, you know, they're playing 3 or 4 really strong games and they're having one stinker, you know? So I think, and you can make excuses like, yeah, they're traveling, they played 3 and 4 and whatnot, but you know, every team's doing that. So, you know, if they can find that level of consistency for you know, a long stretch again, you know, that's something I'll be looking for as well. Also, you know, I don't think a 4 or 5 game losing streak would be that bad either. I think a good kick in the ass and a, you know, reality check could help them, you know, in the long run, right? Like, I don't think you want your team to think their shit don't stink or whatever, you know? So,
just peaking in December.
Exactly. So just more consistency. And it's been a lot of fun. And I think, you know, people have asked me too, like, should we be too high or too excited? And no, I think that's the best part about being a sports fan, right? Like when your team's in misery, all of other fans love to rub it in your face. So when you're doing well, by all means, talk shit. You know, that's what being a sports fan is. So that's all I really got.
Well, they, they're New York's best chance at winning a title. We haven't won since the Giants, I think, won their second Super Bowl in 2011. I think that's the last title that the New York City area has won, or technically a New York team has won. Yeah. So, I mean,
I'll give the Liberty their respect, though. They were fun to watch.
Yes, yes. The Liberty, but they lost in the finals. They lost in the
finals. No, I know, but they were fun to watch. They were close. They were close. Yeah, they were close.
But we need a team to break through, and the Rangers are the most poised to break through. I'll let you go on this because I actually hadn't gotten the chance to ask you on the podcast. You gave out a question: who has a better legacy with the New York Rangers? I'm not sure if you remember this. Henrik Lundqvist or Mark Messier? And you made the case for Hank. Defend the case.
Well, I think, you know, so I definitely worded it poorly. I said, who's the more decorated New York Ranger? And decorated obviously means championships, you know, most would think. But the question I was like really trying to, the way I was trying to phrase it was, when you think of the New York Rangers organization, who's the first player that you think of? And to me, that's Henrik Lundqvist. You know, I don't know if that's most people, but I think if you asked 100 people on the street in New York, who's the first player, and maybe it's a little more recency bias and whatnot, but I just think Henrik is more of a face of the organization than Mark Messier might be. But again, Messier won the cup. He brought the cup here. He delivered that. And that's the most important thing you can do as far as being a professional athlete is. That said, Messier won, I believe, 5 other cups in Edmonton. And I think his legacy might be more toward the Oilers than it is toward the Rangers in the grand scheme of hockey. Whereas Henrik Lundqvist in the overall landscape of the NHL is a known New York Ranger. There's no other team to affiliate with him or affiliate him with. And
well, he did have that 1 year in Washington where he didn't really play.
No, he never played. He never played,
but he was signed.
No, he signed and then had that whole heart thing issue, happen. Right? And he never even like made it to the season. So he never even like suited up, I don't think. Yeah, he practiced a couple times in the summer, but I don't think he ever suited up. But you know, I think like you know, I think a lot of New York sports fans that root for the Rangers just will forever ache that Henrik Lundqvist didn't win a cup here, because I think had he won the Stanley Cup here, there's no doubt, right? There's no question.
Yes, I would agree with you.
Yeah, there's no question. I just think when I think New York Rangers, I think Henrik Lundqvist, and that's just, I feel like that would be most people.
It is tough to beat the guarantee and then backing up winning in a game 7.
Yeah. I said it's the hero and the king, right? Like,
yeah,
it's they're both up there for sure. Obviously, it's just
and Messier was also on the team, like, you know, in 2001, obviously after September 11th happened. So he was the captain of the team after that. So obviously, through that tragedy, he does identify with New York a lot. So,
yeah, the hero again.
I was just, you know, I thought it was interesting considering by resume alone, obviously winning Stanley Cup in 1994, you would think nobody could even come close to Messier in terms of, you know, Rangers hierarchy. But yeah, I mean, you did make a compelling case.
Well, now I'm curious because on the flip side, I want to ask you the same question. Who's that guy for the Knicks?
For the Knicks? For the Knicks, it's probably either Walt Clyde Frazier or Patrick Ewing.
Patrick Ewing didn't win shit, though.
Right. No, but yeah. No, you're right. It's probably Clyde Frazier because considering he still announces for the team, he's still a very boisterous personality. You know, he's got his own lexicon. But yeah.
Hank does MSG.
Yeah.
Now does a podcast. Kind of the same argument, right?
Yeah, no, it is. It is. But, you know, Ewing was probably the best player in the team's history, but it's probably Walt Clyde Frazier because of, you know, coming through, winning 2 titles and calling games on MSG and his crazy style. But yeah.
So now I'm going to ask one more time, just because this is something I don't even know who is. It's probably, you know, I just from surface knowledge, probably Tom Seaver or whatever, but who's the Met?
Yeah, it's probably Tom Seaver.
You know, like, but I guess like recency bias maybe would like, can't say David Wright, obviously, right? Or like,
no, because he never made a World Series. Yeah. Like, you know,
no, he made one. He made one, didn't he? He played in that.
Oh, that's right. He played in 2015.
Yeah.
He played in 2015.
Again, these are like those, you know, these are those conversations. Like, it's just what winning does to your legacy versus like, it's crazy to see how different Henrik's legacy is because he didn't win.
It's one of the biggest injustices in Rangers history is that he,
yeah,
that they've just failed him roster wise for so many years.
Yeah.
And then when they finally got good, he was getting old. It was very sad.
Yeah. Hopefully if they ever do it, he's around MSG and he can lift that thing up.
Just put him on the coaching staff. If you have to, I don't care. Whatever, that let him be on the ice to lift the thing up. But yeah,
I love that question though. I'm happy you asked that. It's a good, clean, fun debate, right? It's just generational differences and all that too plays into it.
That has no, you know, definitive answer either, that you could just go round and round in circles. But that's what we'd love to do as sports fans, goes round and round in circles.
Yeah, I mean, even now it's like, you know, if I'm thinking like, I'm a Knicks Rangers guy, I don't really care much for the Giants or the Mets that much, but like, you know, if the Rangers were to win a cup today, with everything he's done franchise wise lately, is Kreider one of those guys? Like,
I'm not as much of a hockey historian. I'm not sure he's put up the regular season numbers.
No, like, but he's climbing those records. He's climbing the records. He is.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's an interesting one. I'll have to dive in a little bit. Johnny, I know you're a busy dude, so I really appreciate you coming on. Give me a couple of minutes, taking a break. Hope it was fun. And obviously I'm going to be DMing you Rangers questions all the time. You're one of my favorite guests, and hope to do it again soon, brother.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron. I always have fun coming on here, so I appreciate it.
Speak to you soon, man. So I wasn't sure if we were going to have this segment in time, but bonus segment, because the New York Yankees made a monster trade. Juan Soto, the 25-year-old superstar outfielder from the Padres, won a World Series as a 19-year-old with the Nationals, is now a New York Yankee. The crazy thing is the fact that he's this good and has been on three teams before the age of 25. It's kind of crazy. The trade is centered around Michael King, a couple of big time prospects. So we had to bring him on. Emergency segment. Andrew Sender is back. Bud, what's good? How you doing?
Good. You know, was sort of expecting something big, but I think, you know, this was a lot bigger than most people thought it would really be, especially with the addition of Verdugo a couple of days ago. Outfield looks pretty good.
So let's take it back to the Verdugo trade, right? I always think it's weird when the Yankees and Red Sox make deals, because it kind of is like, what are you getting? Because it's the Yankees and the Red Sox. Those teams don't like each other. But we clearly knew as Yankee fans that if this was the one move they did in the offseason, and Verdugo's a nice player, he's a left-handed hitter, doesn't strike out a lot, but it just wasn't going to be enough. And you were kind of waiting on Ohtani to maybe make a decision to see what the Juan Soto thing was. But the more and more you started listening, the more momentum started to gain, because Soto didn't have the no trade clause. And all the other big priced players on the Padres have no trade clause. And after last year, they wanted to shed salary. So once you saw what the Yankees gave up, what was your initial reaction to the trade?
I really like the Verdugo trade. You know, I thought, honestly, like, I thought they would trade for Verdugo and either flip him or that was the move. And truthfully, like, that by itself was great. Like, your outfield has become exponentially better now, because before you had one starter, now you have two. So you've become exponentially better by, you know, upping that by 100%. You know, look, I'm really happy that they actually were able to keep Verdugo while getting Juan Soto. I think that's, you know, kudos to Brian Cashman, which is something that we rarely like to do on this show, but it was a very good move. But, you know, I think getting Verdugo is more than a, you know, just a player. I think he's got a, you know, a nice, like, I got like a swagger to him that I like. He's, you know, he's
got an,
like,
attitude.
He's a fuck you guy, you know, and like, we kind of need that because we're a little bland sometimes. So it's nice to have something like that.
Well, the only thing with the fuck you attitude is Josh Donaldson was supposed to bring that, and he brought it in all the wrong ways, and that was the worst. So you have to be able to produce also. But Verdugo's not on the wrong side of his prime and not over the hill, unlike Josh Donaldson. But I think Soto has a tremendous amount of swagger. I mean, that guy oozes swagger.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, the Soto shuffle is awesome, and I cannot wait to, like, watch that. I just, you know, look, obviously both of them are lefties. Like, that's awesome. But, you know, part of me gets a little bit nervous when you bring over lefties to the Bronx, because sometimes they try to get a little pull happy, you know, guys like Rizzo, you know, Rizzo's gone away from his game a little bit. You know, I hope that that's not the case with, you know, Soto and Verdugo, but, you know, I definitely love, you know, bringing in the younger guys, you know, just a little more attitude. We needed it. You know, we thought we'd get it from Oswaldo. He really didn't get it. Cause, you know, look, when you don't play well, it's hard to have a real fuck you attitude. So
right.
It'll be nice to watch, you know, Judge, Soto and Verdugo command the outfield out there, you know, maybe teach guys like Dominguez, you know, like what's it like to be a major leaguer and, you know, have that FU attitude.
So do you think Verdugo is going to be an everyday player? I know we're just sort of getting away from the Soto thing, but do you think Verdugo is going to be an everyday player? Because when Dominguez gets back, like, they're going to want to play him. Stanton, and we'll get to him, is still on the roster. I mean, I still think they need a everyday center fielder because they want to shy away from having Judge play center field every day. So how do you think this all plays out?
I think a lot of it comes out, you know, how do they play in the first half? You know, if this team's lighting it up, the Yankees will be more than fine to leave Dominguez, you know, the odd man out. You know, it sucks. We had that issue in the infield this year. You know, there was always an odd man out, but if the Yankees need to do that, you know, it's for good reason. And I think every fan would be okay with it. You know, even though we love Dominguez and everything that, you know, he's done, he looks incredible. You gotta roll out the best guys, and the best guys at this moment would definitely be, you know, Judge, Soto, and Verdugo, and then obviously Stanton as the DH. And if that's working, you gotta stick with what's working. On the other end of that, though, I'm very curious to see how this Verdugo trade plays out. Part of me was like, you know, did they get him to try to flip him? You know, was this not part of the plan to, you know, trade for Soto and not get rid of Verdugo? Because it is weird, because you have a guy like Jason Dominguez who's going to be ready to go after a couple of months of the year, and he looks like a stud. So right now you're going to have five starting outfielders. You know, was that really the plan, or was he trying to be flipped? And maybe is Verdugo a trade piece? You know, is he something that at the deadline the Yankees go, you know what, our bullpen's going to look a little thinner now, obviously losing some guys. Maybe we need an extra rotation guy. Is Verdugo that piece? Because, look, he's got a lot of value. He's young. He's a very, very good player. Left-handed. Like, he's you know, he's almost a full package player. So it'll be very interesting to see how they utilize Verdugo. I mean, obviously, look, Juan Soto is going to stay on this team the entire year. As long as the Yankees are in contention, he's going to be their starting right fielder or left fielder, whatever it is, because the dude's incredible. You don't trade for a guy like that to just immediately trade him, you know, half a year later.
No, so they're gonna get that going anywhere, and he's going to get an extension done in the offseason.
I don't know about that. I don't know about an extension.
It won't be this season because Scott Boras is his agent, but yeah, it's going to get done in the offseason. They're not going to trade for him, and then all of a sudden, assuming he plays to the back of his baseball card, all of a sudden just let him walk. That's not
happening. What happens if they win a World Series, though? Because at that point, then you could say, you know what, he's done his job. Because you always say, when you sign a player, right, or you get a player, you say, give me one. And especially if you're the Yankees at this point, if the Yankees win a World Series right now, it's going to be World War III. Like, the New York is going to explode. So if you get that one, the Yankees might just, you know what, like, we got our money's worth. Why would I throw, you know, another $45 million deal? Because, you know what, the crazy thing is, he can make 50 a year. And now, why? You have a lot of money on the books.
Why? Because they print money, and they already committed a monster deal to Aaron Judge, and Gerrit Cole still on the roster. So they're going to try and be going for it with this core for a while.
I hope that's the case. I don't know if it's so feasible. You know, we're not the Dodgers, and we're not Steve Cohen. You know, as much as we like to think we sometimes can be. We're not, you know, our owner is not willing to spend that much money. So we'll see. I hope they extend him. Obviously, I mean, he's a, you know, a generational talent. He's probably the greatest baseball player we'll ever see besides, you know, maybe Mike Trout. So, and he's on pace to be better than Mike Trout. So who even knows? So yeah, I hope they re-sign him. I'm not so sure if it's really feasible for this team.
I'm way more optimistic that he's going to be around for a while than you are. Okay. So, well, that's going to be probably the off season because again, who his agent is. Well, let's talk about the upcoming season. Assuming the offseason for them was over, and this was the roster you roll out with, how much better are they now than they were last year? Because they were putrid offensively last year. Obviously, Soto is one of the five or six best hitters in the league, so you're going to be better offensively. But how much better do you think they are right now as opposed to what they were 24 hours ago?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, look, it's things can change. You know, I think a big piece of this conversation is if the Yankees do land Yamamoto, the pitcher. But right now, look, I mean, I'm very simple when it comes to, you know, analyzing a baseball team. I go through the positions. Catcher, we're a little bit worse. Piggy, as much as, you know, he doesn't do that a whole lot, but he was pretty good.
He was a quality backup catcher. He was catcher a quality catcher. Played 70, 80 games.
Exactly. And now you don't have that, you know? So I would say we're a little bit worse at catcher. First base.
You can find that.
I 100%. But I think there was a lot of intangibles that Higgy would bring to the team that I just, you know, I personally, I'm going to say catcher, we're worse. First base, 100%, we're getting worse. Rizzo is only getting older. You know, I don't know how much he's got left in the tank. Second base with Glaber, I think he's going to have a really good year again. I think he's found, you know, his game. Shortstop will definitely be better. Third base is going to be worse. You know, you're like, yes, it was Donaldson most of the time, but you could say DJ LeMahieu then and DJ LeMahieu now, probably not going to be as good as he was in previous years. Then you go to the outfield. Now this is where it's just tremendous upgrades. You know, at the corner outfield positions, we are miles ahead, like miles and miles ahead. And then obviously the stud Aaron Judge at center is, you know, he's going to be the same dude every year. So, you know, overall, you'd say, yes, the team is 100% better. But where my concerns lie is 1,000% in the pitching. The pitching is, to me, it's just, I feel like we lost such an important piece in Michael King. And I know people like to combat and say, you know, he only had one more year and, you know, is he really even a full starter or not? It's not even that. The guy ate innings, whether he was in the bullpen or as a starting pitcher. It's very rare to come across a pitcher that can do both and be successful at both. You know, there could be a guy with amazing stuff in the bullpen, but it doesn't always translate to being a good starting pitcher. Michael King was able to do both. And look, we got lucky with Clark Schmidt. Was anybody expecting him to have a great year last year? No, you weren't. Michael King, you were expecting it. And he was only getting better. And that's where, to me, it's like, oh, that's a big loss. But then
he was an older guy already. And like, again, Juan Soto's don't grow on trees, right?
No, of course.
Like, Michael King is replaceable. And they just invested in Carlos Rodon last year. So as much as that was painful last year, you have to assume, or, you know, that if he's healthy, he's going to be better than he was last year. You already have Garrett Cole. You have, Nestor Cortez back healthy. I mean, we'll see with him. I mean, I would love another starter. We'll get to Gleyber Torres in a second because I think the logical move with, you know, Peraza being ready to play is to move Gleyber Torres for a starter. But I just think the offense was so bad last year that this is a no-brainer.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, look, right now, like I said, the conversation can wildly change, you know, come, you know, next week or something like that if a Yamamoto deal gets done. But like, you know, right now, I mean, you have Cole, you have Nestor, you have Rodon, and you have Schmidt. That is it. Those are the only major league starters that you have on your roster. And like we see every year, you need around 6 to 7. You do. And they gave up Brito, who was giving you innings. You know, maybe this stuff wasn't really clicking gave you innings. Randy Vasquez looked nasty. I mean, Randy Vasquez, I thought he was going to be the next big pitcher for us, you know? Lost him also.
We know the history of Yankees pitchers who are prospects. It's not good.
No, I agree. I do think Randy was a little bit different because they threw him in the fire. The second he got hot in the minors, they said, you know what? We're throwing you in. And he was doing well. And it's not even about, you know, the end goal of the prospects, you know, them becoming an all-star. It's the innings that they eat. We don't have that right now. And I think that's where, you know, right now, healthy roster, you know, if everything goes perfectly, you know, like it probably won't, This team is incredible. On paper, it's insane. You know, some of the backups that you have in this team, like Trent Grisham is a really solid ball player. He's going to be outfielder number 6. That's incredible. Oswaldo Peraza is coming off the bench. That's incredible. But it's more just that starting pitching right now is really scaring me. And, you know, obviously you want him to go get Yamamoto. I just, like, part of me is like, if they go and get Yamamoto this year, does that mess up our chances at Soto next year? Like you said, you know, you think he's going to extension, all that stuff. You're going to have so much, like, money on the books for the next 6-7 years. Like, how do they pay him? And I think it's all a domino effect of, like, look, it's great. You got Soto and everything. But now it's like, well, where do we go now? You know, like, we can get a pitcher now, but does that mean we're even going to keep Soto? Like, is that now out of the question? Because if we have to sign a pitcher for this year, like, does that set us back? You know, like, can we not pay him anymore?
I think Soto is safe. I think he'll be safe. I think what they're going to try to do is attach a prospect or two to Stanton and send him somewhere for a pitcher. I think that's the next logical move, because while the offense got better still, the Yankees' problem has been the all or nothing baseball. You know, Juan Soto's not an all or nothing hitter. And, you know, Rizzo became a little bit more all or nothing, and he's got to get back to slap hitting. LeMahieu, not an all or nothing hitter, but, you know, has had a couple of down years now. They still need table setters. And Stanton and even Gleyber Torres, if either of them were flipped for a table setter and a pitcher, I think that'd be a good thing.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think, you know, look, I there's no one who I agree more with than what, you know, John Boy says, and when he says the Yankees will never win a World Series as long as Giancarlo Stanton is in the middle of that order. I think it's
funny that you said that, because once the trade went down yesterday,
yeah,
and everybody in, you know, my life who's a Yankee fan is jumping for joy. And again, they did something, you know, big, which they needed to do after last year, right? But it is still so far away from a World Series caliber team. And Giancarlo Stanton, you know, as much as he's had big moments for them, it's just an albatross in the middle of a lineup that just strikes out way too much. And as we've seen anything, the three outcome baseball doesn't win in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's, look, you go through the, you know, the potential lineup and what it really could be. You know, I look at it and I say, you know, Soto, he's a hitter. Judge, he's a hitter. Verdugo and Torres are kind of, you know, they're 75% of what, you know, those two guys are. But then after that, it's like, oh, like, where do we even look? You know, and that's not how you win. You got to win when it's just top to bottom, like every single dude is putting the ball in play. And is like, right now, a mock lineup would have Stanton and Rizzo in the 4-5. You're not winning with that. Like, that's not how you win, because those two guys, yeah, they might crack 2-3 home runs in a playoff series, but they're going to strike out 15 times
and go
1-for-12 with runners in scoring position. And that's not going to work.
I would almost rather hit Rizzo leadoff, because, you know, at least he is able to walk, and he's had the ability in the past not to be so enticed by the long ball. Okay, fine. But you talked about pitching, right? Yamamoto's obviously the prize. If he becomes the next Masahiro Tanaka, that's a major win. If not him, Who are some of the other options out there?
Well, sadly, I heard some rumblings about Frankie Montas, which, I mean, I could not even fathom why we would even go near that dumpster fire. I mean, that to me is just like you're rolling in your grave.
That's shopping in the bargain bin just to, you know,
but you're rolling in your grave. You're rolling like, you know, it's like almost Cashman's just like, oh, that didn't work. It needs to work. We're going to figure it out. You know, I'm going to like force this to work. And to me, like, that's crazy. I think, you know, I was a little upset with Seve. It would have been really nice to bring him back because I, you know, even though the stuff was really not great and obviously he had a pretty atrocious year, I still believed in him. And, you know, I just don't know how feasible it is to sign someone long term like Yamamoto, because look, we've been very lucky with our contracts for the most part, you know, other than LeMahieu. All of our contracts have actually worked out pretty well. I mean, Stanton has been whatever, but he's still been a good player, you know, for the most part, at least. And, you know, one bad contract and that what that does for your organization, like, we don't need to turn into the Los Angeles Angels. You know, like, we right. don't need that, because one bad contract, when you're paying someone that much, that's what it does. It ruins it. And, like, to me, it's like you have it so good right now. You know, we all believe in Rodon. We all believe he's going to turn around. Everyone else has been good. Let's just keep it there, and we can sign these 1-year, 2-year deals. Like, look, a guy like Nathan Eovaldi, you know, like a 1-year, 2-year deal. You sign him, you know you're going to get good innings. He'll be the back end of the rotation, like something like that. I'm not sure who it is, because I know the free agency market is really, really weak this year, which is not very good for us, but you know, I think, you know, whether it's a trade or it's, you know, finding a guy, you know, I hope it's not Montas. I hope that's not Dan.
Do they have enough to trade for a guy like Corbin Burns?
You know what? No, because at that point, if you're going to go after someone like Corbin Burns, then you're going to have to dig into your big time prospects. And, you know, like,
but that's where we are. Judge is in his prime, Cole's in his prime, Soto's 25. Like, what are we doing here at that point?
I get that. And, you know, I'm someone who's normally like, trade the prospects. Like, we have the talent, we're right there. The only difference is with the way the MLB is moving, it's all young talent. Every single year, it's the same freaking formula. It was young talent that was signed early on, right? Given the big bridge deal. Look at the Braves. They are underpaying their entire
front. Everybody is the Braves.
But it's not just the Braves. It's teams like the Astros who did the deals when they were young. So when you catch them when they're young and you give them those 7-8 year deals for nothing, that's when you can make the other deals. We, on the other end, haven't done that, and we're right, paying a bunch to the older guys.
Yeah, but as you well know, the reason the Astros were able to do that was because they lost 110 games for 5 years in a row, and then they were able to bring those guys in via the draft, and then able to, like, the Yankees haven't done that. They've been over 500 for our entire lifetimes.
But even with that said, though, they've had prospects just as highly valued as they have. They have. Like, I mean, you go up and down. Like, I mean, Aaron Judge turned into a generational prospect.
Okay.
Gleyber Torres was a pretty good, you know, generational prospect also.
Volpe,
Peraza. Like, we're talking, these are a lot of freaking dudes. And yes, you know, Cabrera was not really a highly touted prospect, so whatever. But, you know, Austin Wells can be the next big thing. Volpe looks like he's going to be a stud. Peraza looks like he's also going to be a stud. You had guys like Vasquez and Brito, obviously not anymore. But, you know, we never pulled the trigger on the big deal. And to me,
the contracts didn't line up. You're right. 100%.
That's where it scares me. Because now it's like, now we have to make these trades, these uncomfortable trades, trading away, you know, a big prospect here and there. Look, as much as I, you know, love Michael King and Vasquez and Brito, that's a really good deal on our end. You know, we gave away the main piece of the puzzle was a guy who only has one more year left. Even though I think he's a stud, he only has one more year left. We kept all the, you know, the deep, deep prospects, and that's really important. But the second we start digging into there, now you're really saying, you know what, if this doesn't work, we are screwed. And you know that's the case. If they don't win in the next 3 years, and if they went out and made a deal like that, my God, the next 10, 12 years of Yankee baseball would be an absolute dumpster fire.
So what's your number one move if you had it your way? Because they can't be done, right? They can't be done. What's your number one move?
I mean, look, right now, I totally agree. You got to flip someone. You got to flip someone, you know, find someone who's on the trade block. There's always someone there, and it doesn't need to be anyone crazy. You know, we're not asking for, you know, number one starter. We have number one. We have 1A in Rodon. We have number two is Nestor. And we probably have a pretty solid three as Clark Schmidt. Clark Schmidt's a, you know, pretty good major league pitcher. And if even if he's the four, that's fantastic. He showed that he can pitch big innings. He's, you know, really good player. And we also have the good righty-lefty dynamic. It's 2-2 right now. So you really don't need much in that fifth pitcher. But I do think it'd be interesting, like you said, with Gleyber Torres, you know, we have Peraza. Is that a window to maybe get something out of him? And, you know, his stock is kind of high. It's been the highest it's been, you know, in years now, because he really has struggled the last couple of seasons until last year. So maybe there is an opportunity to get a guy, a solid three or four, you know, just straight up for Gleyber. Because look, it's only 1 year of Gleyber, so it is a rental. And maybe you can find a team like maybe the Dodgers, who have an extra pitcher or something, you know, something like that, or someone young, you know, maybe it's a pitching prospect.
He's the first guy I'd look to move.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the free agency market's too weak. So I think you got to do it, you know, internally. You got to find a way to flip.
And even if it wasn't for a pitcher, even if it was just for like another utility infielder that is just a table setter, because let's face it, Gleyber likes to swing for the fences. Fine. So be it. You know, it's time to start playing the, you know, let's get on base and try and hit the gaps and move first to third, than trying to always swing for the fence. So that would be my first move, is trading Gleyber, you know, for something, ideally a pitcher, and letting Peraza get a crack at second base. Obviously LeMahieu can still play second base. So that'd be my first move. And I just believe that, you know, you got to trade Stanton at this point and find somebody to take the dollars, even if you have to attach a prospect and get something back in return. Those are my two moves. And
yeah.
Who, I guess, if you had to pick one pitcher from the free agent crop, who would it be? Well, and we'll let you go.
I will say, you know, I think it's a really interesting, I guess, deal because of how much of a failed experiment it was. But, man, Sonny Gray. Be interesting because, you know, he's
They're
like
not 30... going to do it. They're not going to do it. They booed him out.
I know. But, you know, it's so perfect. It's our Nathan Eovaldi. He's like 34 or 35, might be even 36, to be honest. I know he's up there. Get him on the 2-year bridge deal. You know, get him on that little deal that you can, you know, like it wouldn't affect anything in the long run because the money would be off the books in 2 years. Something like that. You know, I wish there was another guy. I mean, it's just, it's not so deep. It's a really weak.
Okay, after him, who's next?
Oh, man, I know there was a lot of talk about
what Montgomery. About Jordan Montgomery bringing him?
Yeah, no, yeah, I said Montgomery. I think he's going to want a big deal. You know, he's like 30 or something. He's going to get a lot. I don't think it's smart to pay him a lot because, look, as much as of an incredible year he had, and he's had a pretty solid career, I don't want to trust him with, you know, getting $25, $30 million a year, because that's probably what he's going to end up with, and it seems like a lot. Another interesting one, I mean, honestly, I know he's a free agent. He's probably going to re-sign, but Clayton Kershaw would be electrifying. That would be really cool if they could get Clayton Kershaw.
And I can't imagine, you know.
But it's not, about.
He's not going anywhere.
But the difference is that the Dodgers don't really need him. You know, like they can easily say, you know what? we've had our fun with you. You're incredible. And the fact that he's even in free agency tells me that that's probably what they're thinking. You know, if they really wanted to keep him, they would have extended him. They would have done it. You know, it would have been, he would have accepted immediately probably because he loves it there. But, you know, we don't need prime Clayton Kershaw. We need,
now you need an inning.
We need 50% of that.
Right.
Give me 50% and I would be ecstatic because he could be the five. He could be the five. Imagine you have Cole, Rodon, Nestor, Clark, and then Kershaw rounding out the rotation. That's electrifying going into any playoff series, any regular season series. So I think, you know, there's a couple interesting ones. I know Stroman's out there, but I don't like him. I think he's just the worst, you know.
No, he's bad seat. You don't want him.
Yeah, no, I think he's bad for the clubhouse. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's really tough because I think a lot of the guys that are on the market, and there's not a lot of them anyways, the Yankees are just going to stay away, and as they should. I think there's a lot of question marks around the top guys. But yeah, you know, I think Yamamoto, you know, I hope it happens. You know, it would really show me that this front office does have a lot of balls and, you know, they're trying to win because it last year, it just didn't feel like they cared. It just felt like it was, you know, printing money season, and kudos to the fans. We didn't go to the games, you know, it's clearly, it has sent a message.
Yeah, no, I really think that the pictures of Yankee Stadium being empty in September made a difference. And I know the seats were sold and they had the revenue, but they obviously didn't, you know, get the other revenue and they didn't get the postseason share revenue. And you know, they're sitting on a gold mine anyway, right? Like if they bring in Yamamoto or somebody else, like they're just, the merch is going to fly off the shelves, right? The Soto jerseys are going to fly off the shelves. Wow. So I'm not sure they're going to get him because in a bidding war, I think he's probably going to be a Met, but it will be interesting to see what they do for a pitcher. I'd like to see Stanton be somewhere else, even though I'm not confident of that. But
that's the dream, is to see Giancarlo Stanton in any uniform. I don't care if it's the Mets or the Red Sox. I don't care if he plays well against us. Just leave. Get out of here. Literally. Yeah,
I think that the comments that Cashman made about him, that he's going to get hurt, was probably like, I'm really sick of you, so we'll take, you know, 50 cents on the dollar, even though I'm not sure after those comments you can get 50 cents on the dollar. We'll take 40 cents on the dollar. But it's going to be interesting. Listen, the fans asked them to do something. They did something. They're 65% of the way there. If they get to 75% of the way there, and, you know, I still kind of wish that they would be in on Bellinger only to play center field and maybe flip Verdugo for somebody else. But again, we're heading in the right direction.
I think that's very wishful thinking and probably super unrealistic. And yes, of course, you know, if this was MLB The Show and we were, you know, controlling with a controller, the first thing I would do is flip Verdugo, flip Torres, flip Stan, definitely go get Bellinger. But, you know, I think right now this is the best position this team has been in since, I want to say, 2018 when they initially got Stan. I think we're in that position where it's like, holy crap, this team is really, really freaking good. Please stay healthy. And we're like one very, you know, C-level player away from this team being almost immaculate. So, you know, I think what Cashman has done is incredible. I give him a lot of credit, you know, really didn't give up a whole lot as far as, you know, prospects and everything. And getting two really, really good baseball players is awesome, especially getting one from the Red Sox. That's even better. Like,
and it seems like the prior sin of not signing Bryce Harper, who was on a platter, perfect, they have rectified that in getting Juan Soto. The job is not done, but we're on our way there. We will talk again, Andrew, closer to when the season starts, when we have a full picture of what they look like. But we got to be happy with the progress right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's right now, like I said, you know, this is the best team that I've seen since 2018, you know, and we're not even done. We're 50% done with the free agency as far as the Yankees making moves. They still got to go get, you know, potentially Yamamoto, who was, you know, obviously Soto was a huge, huge move, but that wasn't free agency. We're talking the biggest free agency move is going to be Ohtani and Yamamoto. Yamamoto is still very heavily looking like he might be a New York Yankee. So there's still a lot to go. And if they get him, man, I mean, we are, you know, we're the best team in baseball immediately. You immediately will become the best team in baseball. It's really cool. I'm excited. I just, you know, praying to God every day that this team can just stay healthy. Because we know that's stops them every year. Let's change that.
Well, we're going to reconvene right before the season starts for another preview. This was great, though. Kind of like an emergency segment. It was good to talk to you, bud. Always a pleasure, and I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, no, it's always great. Make sure to catch the Syracuse South Florida game, the Boca Bowl, Thursday. Go Cuse.
Let's go. Go Cuse. Happy Hanukkah, Andrew. We'll speak soon, bud.
Yes, happy Hanukkah.
Later. Thanks again to recurring guest Johnny Lazarus. Believe Podcast's own Johnny Lazarus for coming on talking about the Rangers and their season so far. Good stuff with him. And Andrew Sender, another recurring guest, for filling in quick to talk about the Juan Soto to the Yankees trade. Heavy New York episode this episode. Not bashful about it. A lot going on in New York sports right now, so I had to get it off. That is episode 234 for the love of the game. Take us out, Joe Button.
There's some holes in this house. There's some holes in this house. Light that troll in the house. Smoke that troll in the house. Bring that dough in this house. Bring that dough in this house. Where them holes in this house? Where them holes in this house? Where my niggas at?
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.